This edition of Where Did the Road Go is sponsored by Tim, Allison Cook, Eric Hervin, and Super Inframan. If you want to learn how you can sponsor the show, go to wheredidtheroadgo.com. And now our show.
Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
If you have a story you'd like to share with Where Did the Road Go, you can contact us at stories@wheredidtheroadgo.com. If you'd like to come on and talk about your paranormal experiences, stories@wheredidtheroadgo.com. Welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? Tonight I am joined by Mr. Adam Sane.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's good to be back.
And Shirley Black.
Hi there.
And we're going to do some listener stories.
All right.
And the first one comes from Super Inframan, who apparently has a bunch of stories, and he just offered us a few. And with a name like Super Inframan, I would assume he has stories.
Do you have anyone from Is a Hot Dog Sandwich?
No. It's okay. Is a Hot Dog a Sandwich?
Right.
Those are like my two favorite names.
Yeah.
All right. So he said, I want to send in some experiences I've had over the years, one that was particularly strange compared to the others, almost more of a cryptid encounter. And it's definitely a strange encounter. He says, the first house I lived in as a child had all kinds of strange stuff going on. My mom, brother, and sister, and myself all had experiences. Interestingly, my dad never did. We all heard voices and conversations coming from different parts of the house that seemed to be just faint enough not to be understood. I know that so well. That and music coming from other parts of the house where you can just barely hear it and make it out, but then it's not there when you go in there, and it's so freaky. This evolved into my mom, brother, and myself having encounters with shadow people. My brother woke up one morning to see a shadow person looming over our bed. He turned away, then looked back, and it was gone. I often saw it at the end of the hallway toward our bedroom. My strangest experience in the house, though, was a night that I heard someone playing harmonica in our kitchen all night long. I couldn't sleep because of it. My parents, for whatever reason, couldn't hear it. I was wide awake and cried because it made me so upset, and it was so obviously apparent and real to me. We moved out of the house when I was about 6 years old because of the oddities we experienced there. I've continued to have issues with shadow people for most of my life, particularly when I moved into an old rent house just after college. It seemed to attack and wrestle with me in a half-waking state. This was very much in the realm of sleep paralysis and forcing myself to wake up. Obviously, strong chance of hypnagogic hallucination here. Regardless, it seemed to coincide with anxiety and depressive periods. I've come to believe it was either a manifestation of those feelings or it preyed on those feelings. I found that advice about controlling my fear of them and banishing them worked very well. So that's the first encounter that he's sharing, and that I think it says a lot that the sleep paralysis and stuff was happening with anxiety and depressive periods, because I think those things are connected one way or another.
Absolutely.
And the harmonica almost makes me think of the Kundalini hallucinations I would have, because I would hear what sounded like cans rattling, like a big band of like a bag of like tin cans rattling around, and I could hear it clear as day and no one else could hear it.
Really?
So are you just
equating that with just something that sounds metallic?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
the harmonica.
The thing about I've also talked about like seeing smoke come out of the trombone I was playing that I knew wasn't there. The thing is, those hallucinations from Kundalini are very, very real. Like they're not actually there, but they look. You know, you're in a very normal state of mind, and you know what you're seeing or hearing, but you also know it's not real. You know what I mean? And that's kind of what he's describing there, is he's hearing this harmonica play and no one else can hear it.
I was thinking when you were reading that about the strange music and about the harmonica playing, it's something that I'll go back to a time and time again, is being almost like a slippage in time, or you might be hearing maybe someone that used to live there really liked to play the harmonica, and somehow that is going from that time period to that, to his time period, but he can somehow pick up on it. And hearing the music, the faint music or whatever in another room, that could be also another part of that too. I think that could just as easily be explained in that way. I think that could be another alternate explanation for that. That has to be horrifying though, when you think about it. Really frustrating.
Especially that young.
Right. When you're that young and only you can hear it and nobody else believes you. Now, how old did he say how old he was?
Well, he said they moved when he was six. So he was under six.
Okay.
Yeah. He also said that they moved because of the weird experiences that everybody seemed to be having.
Yeah.
So because you're not going to just move because your 6 year old has an experience, likely.
Right. Exactly.
Soraya, how old were you when all that stuff started there?
I was
you were a lot older then.
Yeah, like 11, 12, 13, somewhere in that range. Okay. I don't know because I didn't take notes at that age.
Is that for like the, I mean, I only really know about the Kundalini awakening stuff through you. Well, but is that common for people to experience it around that age?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it can come at any age, but I think it's because you're on the onset of puberty, and that tends to shift a lot of things. I mean, I was playing trombone when I was in like fifth and sixth grade, maybe. So old I was at that point is when I was having those experiences.
Sixth grade is generally like 11 or 12.
Yeah. So that would have been the very latest.
Yeah. Well, that matches up with the poltergeist stuff too.
Yeah.
Right. For 13 is generally.
Yep. What were you going to say, Shirley?
I was going to say that it's a funny thing that musicians often will hear instruments playing. And it's like, I remember like, you know, I used to, you know, play in a Canadian Forces band. And so I'd go to the School of Music where we'd all be like playing for a minimum of 8 hours every day. And there'd be times when you'd be away from all, you know, the band stuff and elsewhere, and you'd swear you heard music. And, you know, and I used to think, okay, well, that's just, I'm imagining things. But I remember sitting around with a group of musicians one night, and somebody else brought that up, and they said, does anyone else hear music sometimes where there shouldn't be any? And every one of us had that experience.
Yeah.
You know, and so I used to think about, okay, it's just a funny musician thing that we're just so tuned into music. Like, you know, when it becomes a really big part of your life that suddenly you're hearing it everywhere.
I can kind of relate to that because there is a weird psychological effect because, you know, working in restaurants and you get like we'd have on the over the table where you made stuff. It would beep when you got an order, right? And you get internet orders, you get a beep. And I would swear that I would hear a beep and I would walk over and there'd be nothing there. But I would keep hearing these phantom beeps because I was so used to hearing it. I would just hear it all the time.
Wouldn't that be similar to like the phantom phone vibration, like where you feel like your phone is vibrating in your pocket or you hear your phone and it's not even there?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I've had that happen to me before.
I've been on my phone and felt my phone vibrate in my pocket and went, okay, look, you're in my hand. You're clearly not vibrating in my pocket.
Yeah. I think there's some kind of weird psychological effect.
Yeah, it is.
Going on there. You become so used to something in your environment.
I suppose, but there's been times when I can remember one time when the music was so clear and it was like, and I was actually like, I was outside where I could see the ocean and I could see all around me and there was nobody there. And I was like writing down the score just because, you know, I was listening to it and I was writing it down.
Wow.
I was trying to figure out what the tune was. Mm-hmm. And and I found, and I brought it back to somebody, and I had them play it because I'm a drummer. I don't play that one, you know, mm-hmm. the melody style, although I can write them. And they knew what the tune was. And I didn't. Huh. So I just thought that was really funny.
Didn't they say about Beethoven as he went deaf that he could still hear music in his head?
Yeah.
Like he could, I mean, of course, obviously he could write music, but he could still hear it in his mind. Not auditory, but
right.
Like in his mind, he could still sort of hear it. That's something that, isn't that something that is, I think I've heard something about that.
And people dream of music and like, you know,
right.
And wake up and write it out when they wake up.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, one of the Psyche Corporation songs was written that way. She had woken up from a dream and she was absolutely certain that she dreamed about a song she heard. And she searched everywhere for it and found out that the song didn't exist. So she wrote it.
I think a lot of creative people have that. That things will come to them in dreams like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Ideas and scenarios and I guess depending on what you're talented in.
We dismiss dreams way too easily for the depth of what's there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that for sure.
But of course, we need to get back to why was a 6-year-old hearing a harmonica?
Harmonica, yes. And obviously, it freaked him out pretty bad.
I was going to say, are harmonicas sinister?
No, but if they're not supposed to be there, I think anything can be sinister.
Depends on what it was playing, I guess.
And not only that, but anything that, even something really, really normal that's out of place can be more sinister than something scary that's there. You know what I mean? Like the fact that normal thing is out of place so badly can almost disorient people more.
Right. Right.
All right. So the second story he shares, he says, the encounter that I'm always very eager to share with the right people happened when I was 7 or 8 years old and my brother was about 15 or 16. We were at a family reunion at my aunt's lake house. The lake came up to the back of the house's property. It was a bright, sunny day, and we were all having hot dogs and hamburgers and generally enjoying each other's company. The water near her house was thick with a lot of trees and cypress knees. Channels had been cut through the trees so boats could pass through. There was a channel that went directly from the open water to her property. My brother and I watched as this large, deep, greenish-black shape rose to the surface of the water and glided toward her backyard. It was about 8 feet long and 6 feet across and somewhat diamond or pointed in shape. As it got closer and the disbelief my brother and I were experiencing faded, we realized the black shape was an enormous snake's head gliding through the water. It was huge. Here's where it gets even weirder. My brother and I decided to go get a closer look at it. We called out to our family that there was a giant snake and we hurried about halfway down the hill toward the water. The family members present all acknowledged it, but didn't seem to see the same thing we saw. Their reaction was what I'd expect anyone who saw a large water moccasin to be, not something that stepped out of prehistory. As we got closer, the snake submerged just shy of the bank. This was also extremely odd. There shouldn't have been enough water depth for something that large to submerge. It was fairly shallow that close to the bank. The snake also had solid red eyes. They weren't glowing, but there was no pupil or iris, just solid bright red eyes. My brother vaguely remembers this still, but the others who were around when we decided to get closer all seem to have forgotten. It's worth noting that I can find no evidence of cryptid lake monsters associated with this body of water. Whatever the phenomena is, I felt like it got a full dose of how peculiar and confusing it can be on that day. So that one's pretty awesome, actually.
So he saw some kind of, was it like a
giant snake?
Giant snake. What did he say that what he thought that it was similar to?
No. Well, I mean, as he obviously described it with the red eyes and stuff, and then saying it dropped down in a place it couldn't have dropped down. I mean, it it has all that sort of ridiculousness of a paranormal encounter, including the other family members not really making a big deal out of it, like acknowledging they're seeing it and then just kind of moving on.
Yeah, that's what, right. That was what kind of hit me, was that, oh, yeah, hey, look, there's this giant snake. And let's just talk about something else now.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Well, that's peculiar.
Yeah, yeah. That's weird.
Yeah, and people do that.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Right. Right. Something that is out of place, and you just get to go on with your life.
Hmm.
And then it'll strike you like years later. It's like, wasn't that strange that we all kind of ignored that giant snake?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did he say anything, going back to some earlier discussions that we've had? Did he say anything about did everybody see it, or did some people just say
he said they didn't see it? They all saw it. They just weren't all, you know, they didn't really have much of a reaction to it. Just like, oh, yeah, it's a big snake.
Huh.
And it has that sort of like phantom sort of feel to it too, because again, it disappeared into where the water should have been coming up. It went down when there was nowhere to go down, and the way people reacted to it, I mean, it seems like it was sort of an anomaly in reality.
Did he say where this happened?
No, just that it was a lake.
Okay. I'll go back to the time theory stuff. Maybe at one point there were large snakes.
Could be.
At some point, and you're seeing something from a different time period that just kind of comes through.
Or maybe someday there will be giant snakes in the future.
That's the other possibility. Right, right. You got to wonder sometimes with some of these cryptid sightings. Like, I watched this thing about the Thunderbirds, one of the Seth Breedlove documentaries. Oh,
yeah, yeah.
And it was primarily about the Thunderbirds. There were some Chicago Mothman things. But they talked about a lot about, you know, the giant birds and people seeing them. And, you know, at one time, in the prehistoric times, there were birds of that size. So either you're dealing with this remnant, or you're actually seeing into another time period.
Yeah.
Some weird time slip is happening, and these people are seeing these really giant birds with these incredibly huge wingspans. Of course, there was that one where the kid got
picked up.
The kid got almost like picked up and almost eaten.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's a glitch in the matrix.
Yeah, right.
Or there is no such thing as linear time, which some physicists would agree with.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, that's Paul Eno's thing. I don't know if you ever talked to him, Soraya, but...
No, I haven't.
I haven't had him on the show either, but he talks a lot about that, about time happening simultaneously and people... What you're seeing as ghosts are actually just people in the past are just bleeding through, or you're bleeding through to them, and that kind of stuff.
From a higher level, I would think time is one thing. Like, if you took our reality and you said, okay, it's a book. So we're in that book going page by page, but all those pages are part of one book. And if you're outside of the book, you can kind of see it all as one thing, and time isn't a thing at that point.
Right, right. It's a good point.
Maybe some of the pages bleed through to one another.
Yep. Yeah, you can see through the pages to the next page in the book most often. Yeah. It's a good analogy.
So someone sent me this news article. It's really short, but then it's going to go into a story someone was talking about on the YouTube page. And it says, somebody answered my dead brother's number. And this came from BBC.com.
Okay, is that Adam? Is that you doing that?
Probably. Sorry.
Is there a giant snake on your side of the conversation, Adam?
There might be. Okay, we figured out exactly what I've been doing here, so I'm not going to do it again.
All right. But yeah, somebody answered my dead brother's number. When a loved one's when a loved one dies, it's often hard to let go, and many people try to maintain a connection any way they can. For some, it may be visiting a grave, posting on a Facebook memorial page, or even texting them. For 6 months, Ruth Murray had been finding comfort in text messaging the phone number belonging to her brother Mike. It was a way of staying close to him after he died suddenly. The 36-year-old from Minneapolis never expected a response, but it was just her way of staying connected to her older sibling. So in late September, when her phone buzzed with a message from the number she had been for years labeled Brother Boo, her stomach dropped. She had texted him just hours previously saying, "I miss you so much, God, what the hell?" But the stranger, Amber Lineweber, 32 of Oshkosh, Wisconsin, turned out to be a godsend for grieving Ruth. When Amber found out what Ruth was going through, she told her to text anytime you need to, adding, "We don't know each other, but I don't mind being a sounding board." So not particularly paranormal, but interesting nonetheless. I mean, it would definitely freak someone out to text, you know, or call a number that belongs to someone who had passed away and get an answer.
Yeah, she just got the dead brother's number.
Eventually. Right, exactly. So this leads into someone named Phone One on our December 28th show left a YouTube comment saying, "Not a huge believer in all things paranormal, but wondering if anyone else has ever gotten a call from themselves. I did, and I have only heard of it one other time. Never encountered anything weird except maybe a silver orb with the ex-wife for about 5 minutes, but could be explained, I guess, but the phone call definitely, it says the phone call definitely me knew something only I knew. Just wondered if anyone else has heard of this." And I asked him for more details, and he said the number came up as all zeros on the phone, which is strange in itself. So it wasn't coming from his phone number. He says, "I know it sounds really bizarre. In heavy rush hour traffic in Seattle in late 2002 to early 2003, and I answered it thinking work. In an age of flip phones and early caller ID, he basically said, 'Shut up and listen,' and told me something only I would know to verify it was me. It's not written very well. I apologize. I knew something only I know. I was the sole survivor of a car crash as a 13-year-old with my oldest sister, who was 19 years old, and her boyfriend coming back from Sears Point Race way back in the late 80s and never said anything to anyone. My older sister and boyfriend were passing away, or I guess as my older sister and boyfriend were passing away, she told me our dad was way too friendly with her and to protect my sister. I idolized my dad and never discussed this. Also about a freezer in Oregon made out of wood that only I know about. I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. I told myself a bunch of things, and two of them have turned out to be true. The rest have yet to pass as the years go by. I don't really understand this whole thing, but I never doubt my sanity. Never had a hallucination or anything. I'm a stable person. I once saw a poster comment from someone who had near the exact same experience, and I tried to contact them, but never got a response back. Maybe explainable, who knows? Maybe all is explainable and we're looking for something not there. Although I'm usually looking for Occam's razor." So he gets a call, not from his phone number, but from just a bunch of zeros on his phone, and it's him telling him stuff that's going to happen in the future. And at least two of the things actually happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where can one attain this power? Because I'd like to be able to do that.
Well, you know, I mean,
I'd like to be able to call myself in the past and say, "Listen, there's quite a few things I tell my past self not to do."
Well, you know, the thing is, though, is it maybe just a form of precognition that took the form of a phone call? Instead of, you know, having a precognitive dream, he had a phone call that manifested as a phone call.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Because, I mean, I've dreamt of myself, when I was a little kid, I had a dream of myself in the future. And when I got to that point in the future, I had the dream of myself as the little kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting, Shirley. That's fascinating.
Yeah. So, So, I mean, you know, maybe he just needed technology instead of doing it with a dream, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And are you guys hearing that voice, by the way? Because you kept cutting out.
No.
No.
Okay. What voice are you hearing, Cheryl Lee?
Well, I don't know. I'm just hearing Greg.
Huh.
I don't know. Who's Greg?
I don't know.
Oh, well.
That's weird.
Maybe that guy's name was Greg, because it just says phone one as his username. So
I have no idea. It's just, you know, it's Skype is acting weird tonight because I updated it. So.
Ah, okay. Luke Osborne left a comment on the Lance Strickler Chicago Mothman show also that said, he says, the shape-shifting UFO mentioned around 38 minutes reminded me of an experience I had when I was a child. I hadn't thought of it in years, but it's my only UFO sighting. I was playing with my neighbors in my neighbor's backyard around the mid-afternoon with a friend and my younger sister. I was probably around 8 or 9. My friend pointed up to the sky and said, "What is that?" I looked and saw a silver orb. It was shining where the sun hit it. I thought, even at that age, that it was a balloon. And as we watched, it changed shape. It became a tetrahedron, and then an octahedron, and then back to a sphere. At that point, it changed back to a sphere. It was shining silver in the sunlight at the entire time. When it went behind a cloud, I ran as fast as I could to my house and up to my room to grab my little telescope and try to get a closer look at it. When I got back, my friend and sister said that it never reappeared from behind the cloud it had gone behind when I left. I've never been sure what to make of it. And, you know, one of the things that always strikes me about encounters like that is that plasma does exactly what he was describing.
Well, it changes that into those kind of shapes like that?
It can change shape, but it also appears metallic. That's okay. One of the reasons that plasma intelligences have been, you know, proposed for something, you know, with the UFO phenomenon, because they can appear like silver orbs.
Right, right. You're talking about some kind of living organism. Plasma creature. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a plausible explanation for UFOs. I think that's an interesting explanation.
At least some of them.
Yeah. That you're dealing with something that is intelligent or is alive in some other fashion, maybe not biologically.
Right, right, exactly. Cheryl Lee, anything?
Oh, sorry, I've been listening to other voices here.
I knew that was you were going to say that.
Why? I know my story. It's I get distracted easily. it's only saying egg now.
Oh. Well, that's Greg not before, very now interesting.
No, it was Greg before. Now it's just egg.
Maybe Greg Bishop is making eggs right now.
But sounds some kind of weird. There must be the equivalent of the NSA in Canada listening in on you.
Oh, who knows? Yeah,
we're not hearing it on our end.
I don't know. It's because I have the wrong friends on Facebook. I don't know. I'm thinking of one in particular because I've been getting really weird emails since somebody I know's account was hacked.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And weird phone calls too. So.
Do you? Should we talk a little bit about that? Because that's something interesting that I think maybe we should bring up. And that involves who?
Well, I don't want to say too much about that. I mean, she said publicly about the fact that everything was hacked.
Yeah. What's her name? I can't remember. That's why I was asking.
Diana Pasuka.
Yeah. And she wrote the American Cosmic. Is that the name of the book?
Yeah. Right. Yep.
So everything got hacked, right?
Yeah, and this has happened to her before, apparently, too. But I don't want to get, too much into it, because I don't know all of what she said publicly and what
she told
she hasn't.
You.
Yeah.
Well, what's been happening to you since then?
Just stupid junk phone calls, like the really annoying ones. like the Internal Revenue Service is going after me, which makes no sense because I'm not American.
Right, right. Well, that's just spam.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, you know, getting the spam calls and but I've had some really weird emails that are like, I don't know. I don't want to give the person who sent them too much attention either, because that just encourages the.
Right, right. Well, that's true.
It's just feeding the trolls.
Do you know, Soraya, what Diana said was that she said that she got hacked, and that's the stuff that just got put on Twitter, where whoever said that said stuff about Tom DeLonge being a Freemason or something like that. Mm. You know, it wasn't anything that was really. I didn't find anything that was really
hard to
objectionable
believe.
Or anything like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the word. I mean, there wasn't really anything that I thought was really bad. There was an odd statement about being Jewish and Irish and surviving genocide or some odd statement like that that was made. And then there was another statement about Tom DeLonge and TTSA being Freemasons.
Well, there was also them being disinfo.
Disinfo and a psyop, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. Nothing that, it's not like anything else that other people have said this like a billion times.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then later on, she was saying that she got hacked. And she sent some things through Greg Bishop, messages through him, and another guy, Dave Altman, she sent messages through him. And she said that she'd been experiencing this, apparently. I know when that day happened, when that happened, like everything was just like blowing up, especially on you guys' Slack.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she has, I was surprised that she got back on any kind of social media, because when we had her on back in April, she talked about how Tyler, the mysterious Tyler that she writes about in American Cosmic, that he was telling her to stay off social media. Mm. And so she had bounced back and forth. She got back on, and when she got back on, I was pretty surprised to see that she actually was back on. And she's back on now. I mean, she's on Facebook, at least. I've seen her on there.
Or somebody is.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's her. That's now.
Because there isn't already enough nonsense going around, then stuff like this happens and it throws even more smoke into the mix.
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, I mean, she's been, I think some of her stuff is pretty important, and there's some interesting people that are behind her, and the stuff that they're trying to do, I think, is just as valid, just as interesting. Valets behind her and all that. And there's some things that come from a very kind of Catholic point of view. And I will say this, that some of the stuff in the Twitter was kind of consistent with that, especially with the talking about how DeLonge is a Freemason and why would that matter? Well, I mean, Freemasonry and Roman Catholicism don't get along very well.
Mm.
So there is that element. But whether it was her or not, I don't know. I'm not going to make a judgment call on it. She did say that she got hacked, and she has had problems before with that. So Cheryl Lee may know a little better about it than I do.
Yeah. But I'm not going to make any judgment statements. Calls on that either. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, quite honestly, sometimes we all say things we wish we hadn't, and sometimes there are trolls in the world, so who knows?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. I'll go out on a limb. I'll say this is that even if she did say those things, like anybody of us here, like would look at that and say, yeah. And I don't know about the Freemason part, but right. we would say something like, yeah, we kind of know this. This is nothing new. Yeah. But you know, if it's somebody trying to make her look bad, then they may be trying to burn those bridges to TTSA. I can't even say it. But it's very possible. But you know, it's hard sometimes because you got to deal with the people that you deal with, and you don't want to be too. You don't want to go after everybody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know,
definitely.
And I think that whoever did that with her was trying to just stir some crap. Yeah, yeah. Basically. Yeah. I mean, essentially. Right.
Let's get back to listener stories. This one from Chris. I was listening to your November 23rd, 2019 show and thinking I should write in. My life has been ridiculously full of the paranormal, starting at a young age. They said, I felt in tune to every story, but the last two, a sleep paralysis and an OBE, historic dream, got me into a space where I was dwelling on my past. The sleep paralysis in question was the first I've heard that jives with my experience even a little. It was about a massive shadow man who had to go sideways through the door. From the age of about 9 to 13, I was plagued almost nightly by a visitor who took up one corner of my room, floor to ceiling. They've included actually a picture that they drew. It was just kind of like their face. And they were just kind of like spread out across everything. And that's pretty freaky. And not typical of sleep paralysis sort of entities, as they usually appear more like, you know, shadow people and things like that. The second story was about a man whose bed started to rock like it was a boat and then morphed into him seeing from both the outside and physically experiencing a man in the ocean with a whale. I started thinking about a similar experience I had when I was about 16 years old during a dream of traveling through some abstract waterly realm when suddenly a shadow blasted by me going a good 20 feet away underwater. I remember swimming toward the surface, and if I could get there, I would be safe. I glanced behind me, and the shadow was closing on me, and it was an orca, but more demonic than a regular killer whale, and it was right on me. Mouth opening. I turned and saw the surface and knew I wasn't going to reach it with the most excruciating pain, the whale's mouth closed on my left calf, right around the calf muscle. The very real pain launched me into wakefulness, and I awoke to a calf cramp so bad I was screaming, and I only noticed when I thought, what is that noise? I remember thinking about the thing that made the whale more demonic is that it had elephant-like black legs with talons radiating out from them. My mom came into the room a few minutes later, and it took half an hour to get my calf to stop cramping. It stopped when we started heading down the stairs to go to the hospital. My leg were hurt for weeks, and the muscle was on constant spasm, and I could feel the line of the bite circling my leg and even had a splotchy bruising in a ring around the shin and calf muscle. I recognized the beast from somewhere, and it was only in the next week when I was going through the second edition AD&D book Deities and Demigods, and the tomb fell open to the section listing the gods from Fritz Lieber's, I don't know, F-A-H-F-R-D, and the Grey Mouser series. I'm still thinking about the strangeness of an injury in a dream coming back with me to the waking world when you finished the last story, and one of your guests, Chris, starts talking about his next project based on whose short story, but Fritz Lieber. Also, they mentioned Alan Moore's Providence, which I started reading yesterday. So, as far as waking up with, like, an injury, that's happened to me. Coming out of what seemed to be an out-of-body experience. Cheryl Lee, anything from you?
Yeah, I've actually woken up with like bruises and various other things and scratches.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of figured.
Yeah.
Could that explain some of the things that are happening in Alien Abduction?
If you're having
some kind of spiritual experience, then it's manifesting into our actual reality. That's a good parallel to some of that.
I mean
especially some of, the implant stuff.
Yeah, and when you consider the placebo effect too, I mean, you can be given something that has nothing in it and it can heal you. There's obviously a mind over matter aspect to us.
Right.
So yeah, if you have something like that that's intensely real, it's not surprising that it can manifest in the real world.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's fascinating too.
Yeah.
Right.
Look at airports. That's a total, you know.
Which is one of the explanations that I've seen put forth for, I think Josh has spoken about it, for the implants, that it's some kind of apport.
Yeah, certainly could be. All right.
That's an interesting dream, though, about the whale. That's pretty freaky. Did he watch that movie about killer whales or something? Like Free Willy or something, and then had a nightmare about it.
No. There was one about a bad killer whale.
Yeah,
I think it was called Orca, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, there was that documentary that they did about the one that killed the trainer at SeaWorld.
No. Hmm. This is a really old horror movie.
Orca. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my childhood nightmare horror movies.
your kinder trauma.
Yeah, well, it's. I blame my brothers really because they like those things. They love to watch those movies. So it's all their fault.
Did they watch Trilogy of Terror? That little
with the Karen Black thing at the end.
Yeah. The little like voodoo doll or whatever.
Oh, they probably
chasing her around the house.
You know, they not only did they watch inappropriate things on TV that I would be subjected to, but they tell our parents that we were going to, a family friendly movie, and then we'd end up in something that was completely age inappropriate.
Yeah,
nice.
You know, because they were both really tall kids. I mean, mm-hmm. They reach 6 feet by the age of 12. So they looked like adults and could get into these movies that I shouldn't have been in. Now, on the bright side, I did get to see Blazing Saddles when I was 10. So that was okay.
I've always liked horror, but I think there have only been two movies that ever freaked me out at all. One being The Creeping Flesh, which I saw when I was really young, and I don't know exactly what it was about it that creeped me out.
The Creeping Flesh.
Okay. Yeah. Have you ever seen it?
No.
It's, I can't remember who's in it now. Guy who plays Grand Moff Tarkin, I think, is in it.
Oh, Peter Cushing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other one being The Blob. And I think with The Blob, it was just the idea of something completely unstoppable.
Right.
And The Creeping Flesh was basically about they uncover a skeleton, and it's Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. And where's the description? A Victorian age scientist returns to London with his paleontological bag of bones discovery from Papua New Guinea. Unfortunately, when exposed to water, flesh returns to the bones, unleashing a malevolent being on the scientist's family and friends, which I think they imply is Satan.
Well, of course it's Satan. Who else would it be?
And it becomes completely unstoppable, you know. And I think again that unstoppableness is what freaked me out as a kid.
I sent the Wikipedia article on the Orca movie, the Orca, the killer whale from 1977.
Yeah, same year that Jaws came out. I think it came out like it was kind of a quick copy.
Right, that makes sense. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Suddenly everything in the water was dangerous.
Because there was there was a whole bunch of these movies around that time that were, I think, The Deep, I think was another one of them. And there was a whole bunch of these films that just that had to copy Jaws. And Bo Derek was in it. I mean, you can't get any better than that.
All right, next story. This one's called The Old Barn. I used to live in an old family house that was once a barn for many years. This place was very important to family gatherings as a child and my mother's side of the family in general. Later, after my grandparents died, my aunt took over the house and I moved to the upstairs apartment years later. My cousins used to tell me stories about how the apartment was haunted, saying that jewelry would get moved or go missing. Another said that a little girl appeared at the end of her bed while in a waking state.
No.
And now we know what Adam's freaked out by.
Ghosts are horrifying. Are you kidding? That's horrifying.
The first thing I remember happening was I woke up in the middle of the night to hear the sound of something dragging down the hall. I got up with a flashlight and went down the hall to the stairs and saw that my
It must have been the creeping flesh.
Yeah. And saw that my headphones placed next to my bed were dragged down the stairs. I can't remember if I saw them being dragged, but I heard them moving as I approached them. I eventually just chalked this up to mice or rats. I would often have sleep paralysis at this house. I awoke once to someone calling my name and would hear strange popping noises as I would try and sleep. Other times, I could feel a presence in the hallway near my room that I was scared of. Eventually, I reserved to sleep with the lights on out of fear and a desperate need for sleep. Mm. One day, I lost one of my red carnelian stone earplugs. Carnelian? Huh. Okay. I had just gotten them and looked everywhere for it. One night, I put the single stone plug on my nightstand and awoke the next morning to both of them on my nightstand. Well, that's a nice turnaround. The doors were locked and I was the only one home. Another time I lost my favorite carnelian ring. I looked everywhere I could think of. One night while reading in bed, I got up to find it sitting directly where I had been sitting on the bed. I know I would have seen the ring or felt it sitting on my bed. I would also walk down the hallway at night and hear exactly what sounded like someone picking up my
Labradorite.
Yes, stones, and setting them back down in the mantle at the bottom of the stairs.
I would like to encourage all of Soraya's listeners to keep including large words in these emails.
Words I've actually never seen before, so it took me a moment. I was getting there. Another time, as I had recently gotten back from a druidry gathering, I performed a ritual to appease spirits, offering them drinks as was done in the gathering. I was a novice at this point and don't remember exactly what I did. I awoke later that night to what sounded like glass bottles slamming together. I would go back to sleep and hear the sound again a few more times. I also once made ayahuasca in the apartment, never drank it, and remember hearing strange noises downstairs that woke me up that night. Often, I would tell my cousin and neighbor of the downstairs apartment of my strange occurrences, she would tell me that she often saw a floating shadow head that would approach her and grin while watching her. What? She would pretend she didn't see him out of fear. I asked her when he specifically approached her, and she claimed it was when she was watching movies, specifically horror movies, like The Creeping Flesh.
Yeah, that's like 4D or something.
I told her that they may be shades, as some call them, and to stop giving it fear to feed on. Her husband also had frequent waking paralysis as well.
Yeah, watch the Care Bears movie and it'll stop.
Another time, my daughter, being around 3 years of age, would tell me stories of her imaginary friend, a little girl with black hair. I always assumed it was an act of imagination until one night before bed she told me how her friend died in a car crash with her father and that she visits through the window. When I asked about her father, she told me he was mean and didn't like me. The detail in her story being coming from a three-year-old scared me. Another night with the lights on. Other times when hiking or being in certain places, my daughter would see supposed people who I could not see. Imagination or ghosts, I will never know. A friend of mine who I told the stories to suggested that I talk to whatever was inhabiting my apartment. One day, as I felt a presence upstairs, I said, I don't care if you visit, but I would greatly appreciate it if you did not disturb me or my daughter while we try to sleep. I also thanked it for returning my ring and the stones. I never had another strange occurrence, as I recall, though I left only a year later. I often had bad luck in this place and was happy to leave.
So I'm sure that she was. Wow. Yeah. That's a, geez.
That's a pile of weirdness just in that one place.
So yeah. Why was she making ayahuasca if she wasn't drinking it?
Well, maybe she was going to and changed her mind. It is a good question.
But, you know, it's just to me, because ayahuasca is kind of associated with a lot of, you know, strange experiences. It's like, is that the spirit of the ayahuasca kind of invading the place, even if you don't take it?
I don't know. Yeah.
You know, like the intention was there. So I don't know.
Yeah, it could be.
It just seems to me that when you kind of open yourself up to weird things, that they'll say, yeah, sure. Here we come.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was probably one of the most discomforting ones that I've ever heard you read.
Really?
I want to thank you for reading that right before my bedtime. You know, floating shadow head that grins at you and the
don't
little
forget
girl.
The little girl. Yeah, the little girl.
The girl that hovers in the window.
Now, see, now I feel so much better now knowing that something scares you. How are you with clowns?
I'm fine with clowns. I don't know if I'd want to wake up and one standing over my bed in the middle of the night. But I am fine with clowns, as you know, if it's in the correct setting.
Yeah, so not in a sewer drain.
Not in a sewer drain, no. Yeah. But kids' ghosts are very there's a sadness to that.
Yeah.
That I think is very real, very palpable. And also you'll hear stories about in these like violent haunting cases. Some people like to term them demonic hauntings, but I prefer the term violent hauntings. That people will see little kids and it's something posing as a child. And that whole phenomenon that Tim and Josh have talked about with the baby crying in the woods, trying to lure people out because kids are something that you want to feel sorry for. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's there's something posing as a child seems very predatory to me. As in a, you know,
yeah.
A carnivorous prey relationship.
Well, and that's kind of true because I mean, really, well, like I was always told growing up in, you know, rural areas that if you heard that sound, that was a bobcat.
So oh, yeah.
She's something
yeah.
predatory that makes that kind of a
right,
baby sound.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a story that David Weatherly writes about in the Black Eyed Kids book. You know, the Black Eyed Kids are very unsettling.
Yeah.
But he talks about this story from a guy, this was sometime in the early 20th century, and he was coming home and this figure approached him, you know, and it really scared him. And he walked into his house, this like farmhouse, and he heard this sound like a bobcat coming out of this thing. And yeah, it's a freaky story. But even that kind of stuff, you know, like we're not animals, we're not used to. I mean, hey, just domestic house cats, when you hear them fight, it's, and you don't know what that is. I know you probably have experience with that, Soraya.
No, my cats don't fight.
But, you know, when two males are going at it, they're loud. And it sounds like babies crying. It's freaky, the sounds that they make.
We used to have a black cat, and when the black cat got very old, and it was the only cat of the three that we had left, he would sit in the stairwell and make a noise like a baby crying.
Yeah.
And it was the first time you heard it, it was creepy. you know, like, because it sounded so much like a baby crying, and then you'd open the door and there'd be the cat. And a friend of mine had stayed over one night and that started, and he's like, "What is that?" And I'm like, "What's what?" You know, and I'm just playing dumb. And finally he opens the door because he's freaking out. And the cat looks at him and runs down the stairs. He goes, "It's your freaking cat."
When I was about like 9 or something, I guess I just had never had the privilege of hearing it. But two male cats were fighting outside, or not really. They just face each other down, right? That's what they do. They try to scare each other, the other one off. Well, I'm hearing this, and I've never heard it before, and I am freaking out. And I just run into the room where my mom was watching TV, and she's actually watching Psycho. So I'm like running into the room, and I scared the hell out of her. Because that was just like, it was just, and she went outside and made the cats go away. Or my dad got up, made him go away. But it's freaky when you hear that kind of stuff. And so you can only imagine like an animal that you would that you've never heard,
yeah,
making those kind of noises. But then there's other things too that are just the audibly the word actually hears like a baby cry. Those are some unsettling stories. You know, that's something that's trying to lure you in, pulling on your sympathy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason that's a part of the reason why the kid ghost thing just kind of freaks me out somewhat.
All right. We're going to end this off with a couple of non-listener stories, but I've found the Magonia Exchange Group to have some really interesting posts. And I talked about this, I think, on the last show. It's a group of people who pull together old newspaper clippings of weird stuff. Jacques Vallée is actually in the group. Chris Auerbach is in the group and stuff. And occasionally they pull up some really unusual posts. I mean, some of them are, you know, could be this, could be that. There's not a lot of follow-up, considering they can be, you know, all the way back in the 1700s. Are you in this group, Shirley?
No.
Okay. So this one comes from the Cambrian Natural Observer in Wales from June 1909. The Western Mail recently printed the following. Men on Swansea pilot cutter Buford report that whilst the vessel was cruising at midnight off of the Mumbles Head, a large black cloud was observed to approach from the direction of, wow, that's all consonants, Willowdo, and pass away toward Devonshire coast. The progress of the cloud was marked by a strange noise, not at all like thunder, as one of the pilots on board put it to a press representative, but like short intermittent rattles, like the firing of a series of Maxim guns. The noise lasted for at least 20 minutes. It was really a phenomenon, and nothing of the like I have ever experienced before during the whole of my nautical career. And it's easy to throw that in the, oh, it's a spaceship, but that doesn't really just sound like a spaceship. That just sounds like something freaking weird.
Yeah, for, you know, they saw some kind of weird cloud.
Yes. Yeah. That was making some damn weird noises.
Yeah. You know, that's a tendency that you notice is that people will... you know, go to that explanation. Well, it must have been some kind of mechanical thing. It must have been a flying saucer or something. But,
right, right.
You know, I think it is probably, you know, something obviously anomalous.
Obviously. I do have one more I want to read, but I totally forgot. I did have one other story I wanted to get to tonight. And this involves someone who messaged me and said that they wanted to know if I had heard about people witnessing commercial aircraft suspended in midair, not moving forward, lights blinking. And they say, I ask because my family and I actually witnessed this phenomena today. We were driving by the airport watching planes come in and out. We spotted one that literally was not moving, 200 feet off the off the ground or so. It stayed in that exact location until we lost sight of it behind some buildings as we were in traffic and couldn't pull over. Nobody thought to get video, and we all had our damn phones. They said there are stories on Reddit and a number of videos on YouTube, though many have been debunked. But I know what I saw, and it was weird as hell. I've had other experiences over the years, but rarely with other witnesses. They said, this was broken up in a conversation. I will say that the Oz moment crept up onto everyone in the car around the same time. We were moving down a stretch of highway that gave us a really good look at the plane, frozen in midair, blue light blinking. We were all trying to figure out if it's some kind of novelty blimp or advertising balloon, but no wires. It was a dull silver airliner or a freight carrier. And they said, they couldn't, there was one more thing. Oh, I can't remember if the landing gear was down. Seems like it would have been apparent. We were traveling in the opposite direction. The aircraft was parallel to the highway several hundred feet from us, stationary above an industrial park or set of warehouses.
That is bizarre.
And I've heard of stories like this before, and I'm trying to remember. There was a book, someone in, I almost want to say it was Whitley Strieber had something like this. I don't remember who it was, but I know I read in a book something like this where there was just a plane sitting there in midair. And Kiel, of course, also recorded cases of planes behaving, you know, looking like planes, but making no noise and flying in ways that planes don't fly.
It must be the flying saucers disguising themselves as planes. That's
see what your brain makes sense of a flying saucer. Like, well, of course, we don't really flying. You know, when you see something, you can't really figure out what it is.
Yeah.
Maybe your brain will say flying saucer. Maybe it will say stationary plane.
Right. Right.
Or bird, or, you know.
It's an anomaly. It's a glitch in the matrix again.
Yeah.
Well, we all know that birds aren't real. But anyway, I wonder if it could possibly be an optical illusion too.
Yeah,
well,
that's what they were wondering as well.
Like, depending on what angle it was coming in at.
Right.
But still, planes come down pretty quickly. You don't get to just stare at them sort of in place, even from an optical illusion. If it's off in the distance, it's one thing.
Right, right.
Because I've definitely seen planes where it looks like they're standing still in the sky, but it's a distance away, and then finally, you know, you kind of change your angle, and you see it was just moving toward you.
Yeah.
Or away from you.
Right. It could be something like that. Maybe some kind of technology is being tested.
It's a Harrier jet.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I could think of that could be able to just hover, but I don't think they would even be that high up in doing that. Could they do that high up?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going with glitch in the matrix.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. It's the Mandela effect. It's CERN. they turned that thing on, and, you know, weird stuff has just started to happen. We actually, we talked about that with Nox Mente, actually. We talked about some of the stuff with the, I don't know, it got weird, man. Like the artificial intelligence and the ghost in the machine and how some of that is causing the Mandela effect stuff and glitches in the matrix. And yeah.
I very seriously thought I was having a massive Mandela effect the last week it was. I was transferring these videotapes, and they're all like promo videotapes that record companies set out with a bunch of music videos on them. And some of them are apparently very rare. So I'm like, oh, well, why don't we transfer them and then chuck them on eBay and see if anyone's interested. So one of them had a video for Iron Maiden's The Wicker Man. And I loved the song. So as I was cleaning it up real quick, I was like, oh, I'm going to watch the video. And in the chorus, which on the actual album just says, your time has come. On the video says, your time has come, thy will be done. And like that came on and I was like, that's not in the song. And then I'm like, listen, I'm like, what is happening right now? That's not in the song. And I'm like, is my brain just completely broken? Because I know this song really well and I have never heard that line in the song. And so I had to dig out the CD and put it in. I'm like, yep, it's not the song. It's only in the video. What the hell? But for a moment, I'm going, if I put the CD in and that line is on the song, I think my brain's going to snap.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I've had my Mandela effect moment too, man. It's weird.
So I don't know why they decided to make a video with a different chorus than the actual song, but that apparently explained it.
Was it a video where they did it live or something?
No.
Maybe it was improvisation?
Nope, it was a promo video, so it was supposedly the song from the album.
Well, maybe there were different versions of the song, and the final one that was chosen for the album was different a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody out there knows the story, but I mean, it was just kind of freaky. Because, like I said, for a moment, it was like, okay, I know how this song goes, and that's not it.
You could ask Jeff Ritzman. Isn't he the Iron Maiden expert?
I should. You're right. All right. So one more story from the Magonia Exchange. This one from 1878, and it's entitled Young Boy. Well, it's in German, I think, originally. Yeah, it's in German, but it says Young Boy disappears and returns with strange marks on his body. I'm sorry, not German. It's Danish. The article talks about a 2-year-old boy who disappeared while home alone with his 8-year-old sister near Aarhus, Denmark. The boy had fallen asleep on a chair in the living room, and the sister had just for a short time left the house to pick up some berries nearby. When she came back, he was gone without a trace. She remembered to have closed the door, and her brother shouldn't have been able to get out on his own, and she hadn't seen anyone in the vicinity while she was outside. When the mother returned home later that day, the daughter was crying and very upset, telling her what had happened. Shortly thereafter, the father also came home, and upon learning what had taken place, he went from door to door at their neighbors to find if anyone knew anything, but no one had either seen the child or noticed any strangers lurking around. In the meantime, the mother searched everywhere she could possibly think of, also without result. The search continued the next day, Sunday, and a missing persons report was filed. When the mother returned home the following Tuesday, she found the door unlocked and in the living room with her son, alone and in perfect health. The mother was, of course, relieved and happy, and her husband likewise when he later arrived home. At first, they were both content to learn their son was alive and home safe, but the following day, the mother began to worry. On the boy's right shoulder, she had discovered a strange mark, like a wheel, seemingly tattooed onto the skin. The mother, who believed that a witch or similar had taken the boy and marked him, now became terrified that it would bring along all kinds of evil. In the meantime, no one has been able to establish who has kidnapped the boy, brought him back again, or why. The article concludes that it seems reasonable that some malicious person did it to frighten the parents, but does not speculate further. And that was August 11th, 1878.
Oh. Yeah. 1878. Okay.
I mean, there's some vague connections to, like, missing 411 stuff there, too. Except it was the daughter picking berries, not the son, but he just disappears when he shouldn't have been able to disappear and reappeared just as strangely. But I would think if I had read this with Josh on the show, Josh would be telling us all the fairy lore that could go along with this case.
Oh, well, I'm certain that's there. This was in Denmark.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got some strong Scandinavian fairy stuff. What was he out with his sister?
No, he was in the house. He was locked in the house. He was locked in the house.
Yeah. That's like a bi-location.
Well, no, bi-location is two places at once. He was no place.
Oh, right. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. He went somewhere and then came back. Yeah.
With a weird mark on his shoulder.
Yeah. Strange.
So, all right.
Now you know how people would explain that now. Obviously, the aliens took him.
Right. Well, exactly. Exactly. That's one of the reasons I wanted to read that one, because it shows you that, you know, this stuff has been happening for a while, and it's just a matter of what filter you look at it through.
Right, exactly. It jogged my memory on something that I read just recently that I thought was interesting. There was a story from colonial Mexico of this was in Mexico City. I wonder if Red Pill might know this, because this is kind of a famous story. In the, I think, the 17th century, so 1600, somewhere around there, there was a guard that just appears in Mexico City. And they don't know where he comes from. He's wearing a slightly different uniform. And they ask him, well, why are you here? And he says, well, that he was in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the governor of the Philippines had died just the day before.
Right.
And they put him in prison. They put him in jail because they're like, who is this guy? They didn't know, you know, they thought he was just some guy messing around. Well, you know, it took some time for the ships to get from the Philippines to Mexico. It took about maybe 4 or 5 months.
Right.
And so in that period, after about that period of time, the news comes that the governor of the Philippines had died the way that this guard had said. So they had to release him. But somehow he ended up in the Philippines. He ended up in Mexico City, thousands of miles away. Just magically appeared there. And this is
This
is like a documented story from colonial Mexico. Hmm. So it kind of who knows where that kid went?
Yeah. Yeah. Any thoughts, Shirley?
No, it's funny though. You know, when you're talking about fairies and UFOs and things, I just bought a book. Well, it was actually a gift to me, but I picked out the gift. But it was a book on fairies, and I'm reading it and I'm going, my God, this sounds like UFO stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it really does.
Right, right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it really does. And I don't think it, like, you know, the UFO stuff is fairly new to, you know, like I really wasn't interested in UFOs at all before. So at one time I would have read this and I would have just thought fairies and, you know, folk tales and stuff. But now when I read it, it's like, oh my God, like some of the senses, I swear it could have been written by Jacques Vallée.
Right.
It's so parallel. And it's all about how the fairies are, you know, how the fairies are being seen by people again, that there are these times in history when they're closer to us and we see more of them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you hear about UFO sightings too, since they tend to come in waves.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Adam, where can people find you?
They can find me at conspiranormal.com and the archives, conspiranormal.podomatic.com, which by the time this goes up, we will have done 300 episodes for our show.
Nice.
So there's a lot there.
And Shirley, anything you want to say about when your book might be coming out?
Well, cut that out.
I'm
what
sorry.
What about your book, Soraya?
People keep asking me where Shirley's book is.
I know.
And technically it's done.
It is. Except, well, it's just the logistics of part. The publisher would have been really helpful with.
Sure, sure. But you will be putting it out soon, maybe?
Oh, maybe.
As far as my book, I'm actually working on two books, which is making both of them take longer. So
hopefully, try to do two at the same time.
Yeah, well, one's on my experiences, one's on some ideas, some of which we've talked about on the show, like the wilderness poltergeists and stuff, and kind of trying to put it all together in one cohesive whole. Plus, there's one sort of novel idea in there I haven't talked about yet, and I'm not going to talk about until it's in the book. Shirley, I told Shirley about it because I wanted to check my data, and so she knows what I'm talking about, and hopefully that will be interesting when it comes out.
Okay. Excellent.
All right. So thank you both very much.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, you're welcome.
I would like to thank my awesome Patreons for all their support. and all their help, and for continuing to help me make Where Did the Road Go a thing. So I would especially like to thank those of you pledging $10 or more. Tim, Allison Cook, Eric Hervin, Super Inframan, Rob Drummond, Alex Whitcomb, Nadine, Damian Tallman, Edu Camahort, Luke Osborne, Tactical Therapist, Janet Bunderson, 36 Dingo, Maria, Jennifer Campbell, American Rambler, Kevin, John Rutledge Foster, Eric Citron, Andy McNamara, Sasha Jorg, Matthias Sunby, Dominic O'Malley, Christopher Vaughn, Riker and Stark, Sean Cosgrove, Jose A., Roger Gonzalez, Craig Cicernos, Lindsay Jackson K., Alfred Tuttle, Kevin Schreck, Patricia Gaiaquinta, William Lovelace, Mark Brady, Chris is a hot dog a sandwich, and Carla Mahoney. Thank you all so very, very much. All right, I hope you enjoyed that. Send us your encounters, your experiences at stories@wheredidtheroadgo.com. And we'll talk about them, or you can come on if you want to talk about them yourself. All right, we're going to take you out with a band called Floodlands. These guys are from Binghamton, New York. I had them play the last exit for The Lost recently. Cool guys, cool band. This is a song called Martyrs of Shame. See you next time.
Let your slaves grow. have been listening to Where Did the Road Go? This show is made possible in part from our Patreons, and we thank you and everyone listening for helping us continue this exploration of the strange. You can always find everything Where Did the Road Go related at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com. And thank you so much for your support.